I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender. Good looking, so refined. Say, wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for air.
Connection listeners, how long does it take you to size somebody up? A second, maybe? A minute? And how often are your first impressions your lasting ones? Imagine you're meeting somebody for the first time in a public place. You've spoken on the phone. You've heard his voice, slight local accent. It's a soft sound, low pitch. He's told you the basics of what he looks like. He's got a mustache. He wears glasses, 6 feet tall. And on the day you meet, he'll be wearing a brown jacket and a yellow tie. Have you already formed an opinion? It's a particularly human trait to make snap judgments. But are you right to draw the conclusions you do? We're talking about what first impressions say, why we make them so swiftly, and how lasting they are. Make a first connection impression this hour at 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Nalini Ambari, our guest in the studio, is an experimental psychologist at Harvard. She studies nonverbal aspects of behavior and first impressions. Joining us by phone is Daniel Hogan, a management consultant and executive coach at the Apollo Group. Nalini Ambari, I want to begin with you. What does your research tell us about how long it takes for somebody to make a first impression about somebody else? And then what is it in that first impression that lasts?
Okay, that's a very broad question. My answer is somewhat qualified. It depends on what you're trying to judge. And some of my research, for example, has found that if you're trying to judge something that is quite precise and that is related to what you can infer from a first impression, people are pretty accurate at doing that. But it's very heavily contextualized.
And, all right, let's talk about context. Yeah. You're looking, yeah. It could be a date, it could be a juror looking at a defendant, it could be a wannabe tenant looking at a landlord or vice versa. Let's narrow it to jobs and courtship.
Mm-hmm. What can we tell? For certain, I'd say that in terms of the research that we've done on expressive behavior, what we find is from as little as 10 seconds of nonverbal behavior or even 2 seconds of nonverbal behavior, we can make quite accurate judgments depending on what we're trying to judge. So, for example, if we're trying to judge variables or qualities that can be judged through expressive behavior where nonverbal behavior is extremely important, we're pretty good at doing that. So, for example, we're able to distinguish between better and worse sales managers just from vocal tone cues. As brief as 10 seconds, and arguably one could infer then that to be a good salesperson, you have to be pretty good at communicating, and nonverbal behavior is particularly important. Thus, these judgments are accurate. But I think it would be much harder to tell, for example, if someone is going to be a good accountant. So it depends on the skills that you're trying to pick up. If you're trying to pick up interpersonal skills from these brief observations, first impressions can be quite accurate.
You do scientific measures of these things. Mm-hmm. I wish you'd explain the experiments and how did you come up with 2 seconds as a kind of objective number?
Okay, I'll tell you what got me into studying this. It was quite serendipitous. I was interested in examining the performance of teachers instead of seeing what the variables were that predicted good teaching. And so I was able to obtain a sample of videotapes, and I found that the longest clip that I could get of just the teacher alone in the shot without the students was about 10 seconds. So I got these 10-second clips and had people evaluate them on a number of different variables and correlated their ratings with the end of the semester evaluations of these teachers. And I found, lo and behold, that these ratings were quite remarkably accurate. The correlation was 0.76 or so. So then I thought, how much can I slice these? So I sliced them down to 2 seconds, and the results replicated pretty strongly. It was the same effect. And again, it makes sense.
Well, the judgment, what? I'm going to like Professor X or Instructor Y, and it turned out I did, or this is going to be a good course, or what?
Oh, no. Yeah, they judged. So, for example, I show you a 10-second clip of 10 different teachers, and I ask you to rate each teacher on how warm is this teacher, you know, how enthusiastic is this teacher, you know, how much of a good communicator is this teacher on a 9-point scale, then I aggregate your ratings and correlate them with the end of the semester ratings by the students in the teacher's class. And I find, lo and behold, that your impressions from these 10-second, actually these were silent video clips, correlate incredibly highly with the end of the semester rating. So in a sense, it's a brief evaluation predicting a longer evaluation from people who know them.
This is a microcosm of the way, presumably, we judge all kind of folk.
Right, precisely. Irving Goffman talked about the glimpsed world. You know, from glimpses of people, we make pretty strong inferences. Very often, we're not aware that we're doing that. But we sort of know when we're navigating, you know, a busy street, who to avoid and who not to, you know, who to sit next to, perhaps, you know, in a cab.
These are not only nonverbal, non-spoken clues; they're silent clues. It's all visual.
It's all, yeah. Some of it can be visual, but yeah.
Then what are the key things we're looking for?
Well, it's not necessarily visual. We communicate through very different channels. And what we've looked at when we've done a lot of our experiments is looked at different channels. So, for example, people can infer pretty accurately certain variables from tone of voice cues or from speech cues or from just the body or from just perceiving a person's face.
Leave out the audio for the moment.
Right.
Can you isolate the visual clues that people give about whether this is going to be a good section of a course to be in, but a good person to be associated
with. Right. That's a really, really interesting question, and it's an important question. We've tried to do that by, for example, with the teachers. Let me get back to that example because I think it's quite precise. We tried to figure out what the good teachers were doing. Are there certain cues? Are they smiling more? Are they leaning forward? Are they nodding their heads? Are they making more eye contact? And it turns out that any of these specific micro variables don't correlate as well as this kind of molar fuzzy impressionistic judgment that we make. And I'll tell you why that is. For example, a smile is not just a smile. A smile could be a threatening smile, it could be a nervous smile, it could be a friendly smile, it could be a supportive smile. So just, you know, coding particular behaviors don't tell us much, but you can interpret the smile in the context of the other behaviors.
What does beauty have to do with it?
Beauty doesn't have a lot to do with it. We find out that it's not just physical attractiveness. There's something about the behavior as a whole. So, for example, a person could be unattractive, but might be a really good teacher because they're expressive, they're enthusiastic, and they communicate genuine interest for what they're teaching.
I'm listening carefully here. That's the second time you mentioned enthusiasm as a key. What about enthusiasm?
Yeah, we think that in terms of predicting a lot of these variables that are related to effective performance, effective teaching, effective consulting, effective sales, effective medical care, that expressiveness in general is very important.
You said expressiveness twice now.
Right.
You haven't mentioned what I think may be the big key, which is energy.
Which sort of gets reflected in enthusiasm and expressiveness, but it's not mere energy, it's kind of a involvement or engagement, I'd say.
Another E word. What does expectation have to do with it?
What does expectation have to do with it? Could you specify?
Well, I'm looking through these clips of teachers, but it might be, you know, lovers or account managers or whatever. You have something in your mind's eye to begin with.
Right. Right.
That's what I mean by expectation.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to have some knowledge of the domain you're trying to predict. So, for example, if you show these clips of teachers to somebody who'd never seen teaching or experienced teaching, they're not going to be very accurate because they don't really know what good teaching, what the components are, the ingredients are. Or similarly, in terms of relationships, people who haven't, you know, observed people in different sorts of relationships may not be very accurate. But it turns out, you know, you'd mentioned relationships, and there's been work showing that it doesn't take more than like 5 or 10 seconds to tell if you're observing, you know, different sorts of couples, whether they're in a romantic relationship or a platonic relationship, or whether they're strangers. People can do that pretty fast.
What does the audio track add to the whole experiment?
What does the audio track add above sound, above nonverbal, above, you know, purely silent? It adds a little bit, but not necessarily a lot. It could be independent. People are pretty accurate when they only have audio information too, and no visual information at all. I think the big question is that's still not resolved out there is what particular cues contribute to what particular judgments, and we don't know the answers yet.
It'd be nice to know.
Yeah, we're still trying to figure that out.
So. We're talking about the science of first impressions, which, according to the experiments, are everything. First impressions tell all. We've sort of always known it, perhaps, but our guest and others have done a whole lot of scientific refinement of the point. Nalini Ambari does it at Harvard. We're talking also to Daniel Hogan, who does it for a living with companies. Although I also want to come back, maybe with both of you, to the question of the choice of mates, too, and friends, but especially the mechanics that we all know more or less of how a kind of built-in computer scanner is always looking for sort of compatible souls. And when sometimes it locks on to targets out there, even when we weren't looking, and tells us, gives us a message that is, as they say, communicated before it's understood. We're talking about first impressions. 1-800-423-8255 or 1-800-423-TALK. Daniel Hogan,
yes,
at the Apollo Group, you've been involved in some of Nalini Ambari's research. How do you apply it in the business world?
Well, obviously the main way is through selection interviews and hiring people, and that's what most people are concerned about. And it turns out that this is a very powerful predictor of job success. We did a study, Chris, with consultants where we looked at the most compared a group of very successful, outstanding consultants as rated by their superiors with a group of average consultants. And we just took in here that this is responding to your question about the audio side of things. We content filtered this speech so that we took out high frequencies and only had, we listened to tapes. We had tapes of interviews with these consultants. And we looked at those, had naive judges rate those tapes for things like enthusiasm, and then correlated those ratings with who are the best consultants, and got extremely high correlations. And the implications of that are tremendous. What it says is that in the hiring process, where the interpersonal side of the equation is important, that you can make useful, valid judgments about a person's warmth or other soft characteristics that will be useful in terms of how good those people are going to be at their job. That won't apply if the job doesn't require any kind of interpersonal interaction, but most of the jobs that we do today do. And in fact, I think it's becoming more and more important. Mm-hmm.
Well, spell out the things you would be looking for if you accept that premise. Then what?
I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, all right, you're saying basically trust your judgment on the feelings that you get right off the bat in meeting a prospective employee.
Right, but what we say to people is that you need to be rigorous about that. First of all, you need to identify what are the critical sort of interpersonal characteristics in the particular job that you need to be paying attention to. And then you need to be rating those. And so it's important at the outset to know what you're looking for. And, things like, for example, we found that things like decisiveness, we weren't able to pick up as well on the consultant side of the equation. But things like warmth and friendliness were highly correlated with outcome, as rated by those naive judges. So you have to first identify what you're looking for and make sure that that's able to be picked up. And then you have to be rigorous about rating it. You have to translate that quick judgment, and what we recommend is after an interview, to have a sheet, a rating scale, and actually make the ratings there, make hard ratings. And then you want a number of people to do that, ideally, so that it's not just one person making that.
How is that different from reporting to, if you're one of five people that is evaluating the new salesman, and they ask you and you say thumbs up, yeah, I like it, liked him, liked her. How are you refining that sort of intuitive, fundamental, go with your basic instinct judgment?
Well, and you're refining it by, first of all, identifying the specifics of what you're looking for. And you can be rigorous about that. That's another area. But, you know, how important is warmth? How important are these different characteristics?
Warmth and enthusiasm. These are the words.
Right. There may be different ones that are important in a particular situation. The ability to handle conflict in some jobs, and then you need to rate those. I've been talking with the educational institutions in terms of how they admit people, and how do you today, with the increasing competition and how do you get beyond test scores, SATs and other kinds of test scores and grades, to look at the whole person, and suggesting that in the interview process that people get rigorous about looking at things like leadership.
Could I ask you both quickly, can people fake warmth and enthusiasm to get past your screens or not?
Yeah, I mean,
can we pick that up?
Well, I think people can fake it to some degree. There are huge individual differences here. Some people are extremely good at faking. Some people are less good. Some people are extremely good at judging. Some people are less good. You know, so I don't think it's anything that's sort of completely empirical. But if you get a bunch of judges, what we found is that if you get 5 or 6 people making ratings, then their errors sort of cancel, and you tend to get some agreement, and they tend to be more accurate when you aggregate these judgments. Can people fake it? Yes, people can be coached to some degree. But if you put them under pressure so that they have to monitor other behaviors or other thoughts, then they can leak. And what we find in terms of leakiness is that there are certain channels of communication that are particularly leaky. People might be paying particular attention to their eye contact or their smiling, but they may not be controlling their vocal cues, because it's hard to pay attention when we're in an interaction. It's hard to think of what we're saying and how we're saying it, as well as and monitor everything. So you could be coached to some extent, but things tend to fall apart at times.
Chris is an interesting Oliver Sacks, who wrote The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
Sure.
Yeah. As a funny recounting of aphasia patients who are unable to decipher speech.
Right.
And they were watching a speech by Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I remember that. Well, and they laughed.
And they laughed. They were just laughing hysterically. And when they were asked why they were laughing, it was because they said, this doesn't look like someone who believes what he was saying.
He was leaking. And there's recent work by Anansi Etkoff and Paul Ekman, who found, in fact, that aphasic patients are very good at detecting deception, much better than other people, because they're paying attention only to the nonverbal cues. And, you know, they don't get the verbal. So
this is absolutely interesting.
Yeah. And another thing about that is that it appears that that's a little bit learned behavior. People who are aphasic, recently aphasic, are not as good at doing that. So they develop, because they aren't able to listen to speech, they start paying more attention, and after a while, they become very good at it.
1-800-423-8255. We're talking about first impressions and the scientific evidence that the first 2 seconds, the visual impressions, can tell the whole story. What do you do about it if you're trying to make an impression, if you're trying to take an impression? 1-800-423-TALK is the connection phone. Jim is on the line. Welcome, Jim.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Yes, Jim. Are you there?
Hello, Chris. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Jim, go ahead.
Hello.
Jim, try it again. 1-800-423-8255. Susan's on the line in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Hello,
yes,
Susan.
Yes, hi. I was just going to tell you that it was love at first sight with my ex-husband, and a week later when we went out on our first date, when I met his parents, I thought to myself, these are bizarre people, and if I marry this man, they will make me miserable for the rest of my life. I did go on to marry him because he was adopted, and I thought there was a chance that genetics played a larger role than environment, but in the end we could not survive his parents, so... and there were a lot of verbal cues, and there were a lot of physical cues that I think had us both fall in love at first sight, and for me to realize that his mother would be nothing but trouble in her life, which she was.
This is a compound problem of sort of netting out 3 first impressions, 1 good, 2 tattoo warnings. What were the visual impressions of your husband, Susan?
Great eye contact. We knew as soon as our eyes met, the very first time, I knew my exact words to myself is, I'm going to marry this man. And the visual cues, eye contact, I mean the nonverbal cues were eye contact. He let me make sure that I noticed that his hands didn't have a wedding ring on them. Very warm and welcoming, and I was not in a situation where I wanted to get married, but I knew that this would be the man.
What did stature, eyes, hair, beauty, clothes for that matter, color had to do with it?
Well, he was a mechanic, so he was in grimy clothes, and I think he's a very handsome man, but mostly it was a smile and a very warm smile and very direct, meeting my eye contact, which said, I will meet you and be a partner equal, which unfortunately he could not be because he had to live up to his parents' needs more than mine.
What were the 2-second warnings you got from the parents?
Let's see. His mother would only encounter me with folded arms.
She didn't make eye contact?
She would not. Neither one of them, neither his father nor his mother, would give me direct eye contact. There was already an encircling to close him off from me. So there were a lot of warnings that told me that he needed to meet their needs more than he could meet mine.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good reading, don't you think?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Were you conscious of this, or were you?
In fact, my first thought of meeting my ex-husband was, I'm going to marry him. My first thought of meeting his parents was, if you're smart, Susan, you will leave while you have a chance. And when I found out he was adopted, I honestly thought, well, maybe there's a chance. But in fact, the adoption made it even harder for him. They made it very clear that for him to leave and get married would be to abandon them.
Well, it's really interesting because when you get into relationships, I mean, the work that we've been talking about is when people are just judging, but they're not interacting. So when we interact, our impressions of others also lead us to behave in certain ways with them that, you know, confirm or disconfirm these interactions. So did you find yourself behaving differently with them, too, based on your first impression of them?
Hmm. Oh, I think that the reason he ended up marrying me was I was the only woman that was strong enough to try to counteract his mother.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, I met old girlfriends of his who said, how do you like the old battle axe, referring to the mother? She scared them all off. And I thought, well, I can do this, but it's very hard.
Susan, we live and learn, and you have too. 1-800-423-8255. Kathy is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, Kathy.
The guest and caller have used the phrase highly correlated when discussing the results of experiments showing that 2 seconds impression predicts the end of a semester evaluations. And, Chris, you've actually summarized this as with the conclusion that first impressions are everything.
Mm-hmm.
But a 0.6 correlation isn't actually that strong. It accounts for barely more than a third of the variance in ultimate outcomes. So I'm hoping a guest would actually use her own research to qualify that interpretation that 2 seconds are actually predicting everything.
Yeah, they're not predicting everything, but they are quite statistically significant. And I think, again, you know, I think that needs to be qualified. First impressions don't predict everything. They predict certain behaviors in certain circumscribed situations when you know what the ingredients are that sort of make up the criterion that you're trying to judge.
I'm just not satisfied with that, though, given that the percent variance accounted for is still less than half of the variance. So I'm wondering, does your research shed any light on some of the man on the street saying these qualifications like don't judge a book by its cover, you know, get to know you, first impressions aren't everything, given that there's so much variability that the 2 seconds isn't actually explaining?
Well, a 0.76, I mean, I don't want to get into, arguments about the statistics, but a 0.76 correlation is pretty good in terms of predicting personality or social psychology. We tend to, you know, get correlations around 0.4 in general. So that's not too bad.
Yeah. For publishing your work in a journal, but I don't want Pete. I'm worried that.
Yeah, I mean, I think your point is well taken. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Kathy, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. Eric is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Hello, Eric. Welcome.
Thanks. Good show. I just want to know how important is dressing leads to positive interaction or negative interaction.
Good question. Clothes make the man. Dan?
I think that's a hard one to answer. I think obviously clothes do make a difference, but then the interesting question is to what extent does that
correlate, and I'm not sure the answer to that, with who the person is. In other words, that you dress because you are a kind of person. I don't know of any kind of research, Nalini, I don't know whether you do, in terms of actually just looking at dress.
Well, I haven't done any, but I know, you know, there's been a lot of work looking at how clothings affect impressions, and they do. I'm not sure whether that's been related to, you know, actual outcomes, actual performance types of outcomes. But definitely clothing does bias people's impressions one way or the other. But hopefully, you know.
Does it fit in on the same scale where you're looking for warmth, you're looking for enthusiasm? Can you you dress for success. Can you dress for enthusiasm? Can you dress for warmth?
I'm not sure you can. I think you can dress to convey conscientiousness or, you know, neatness and appearance.
Conscientiousness is one of the strongest of the sort of personality factors that correlates with job success across a variety of jobs. So that is the most powerful.
Do you come back afterward, as Nalini has done, and look at the success of your predictions in terms of small company hiring, Dan?
Yes, we do. I mean, that's one of the things, and we try to get companies to do that. Interestingly, it's very hard to get them to follow up. Companies have the capability, it's there usually, to follow up how they've done. In the same way, if you take a look at an NFL draft, you know, they ought to be looking at the success of their draft rating.
We're going to take a short break, Dan Hogan. One sec, we'll be back. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at allaire.com. From Boston University, this is WBUR. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is the First Impressions Connection. The casting agent, Carolyn Pickman, joins us by phone at CP Casting. She auditions thousands of people every year for movies and for television. She joins a conversation with Nalini Ambari, clinical psychologist or experimental psychologist at Harvard, and Daniel Hogan, who monitors and shapes First Impressions and judges them as a management consultant with the Apollo Group. Carolyn Pickman.
Good morning.
How do you decide who gets the part? And welcome.
Thank you. Another very interesting show, Chris.
Thank you.
Well, what I do for a living is I try to match up the right performer to the part. And I use as a guideline, you know, the script that is given to me and also the director's input. And with that, we then proceed to try to bring in who we think is the right person for the job. And with that, we also have a lot of people to choose from because the competition is very, very, very high in the performing industry. So we have to do some eliminating right from the very beginning. And but then a person comes in and auditions for a role, and they go the next step, as a matter of fact. They get past the first impression, and they go to the next step as far as demonstrating. And they need to, in the interview section, they need to demonstrate their talent a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then people, you know, choose from there.
Let's say they fit the type you're looking for, a short, swarthy male, say.
Yeah.
Then how do you narrow the field, and how long does it take you?
Well, the first impression that we have in our business is to take a look at somebody's picture and their resume, and that's their tiny first baby step. So we look at their picture, and we say, does this fit the profile, so to speak? And then we turn the picture over, and we look at their body of work. And their body of work will tell us who they trained with and what kind of parts they have. And so we're able to, you know, look at that and make the next sort of choice. And then people walk into the room.
Okay. Critical moment.
Critical moment.
They walk in the room and then what?
And then they walk into the room. And I think that it's important that they show a calm confidence when they walk into the room. And what we say here is that, you know, the audition begins when your hand touches that doorknob, you know, and the door opens, and never, never to lose sight of the fact that the people on the other side of the room are hopeful. And they are hopeful because they want the you to be right, you know, mm-hmm. and they want, and so they're looking for those signs, you know, are you right? And if you are right, thank God, we can now get to work and the job is over. And I think that a lot of people lose that, you know, aspect of it, and they come into a room and they feel that they're being judged in some way, or mm. that they have to they're being tested for their ability. And the minute that you start,
and of course they are, right?
Well, in some ways, yes, they are, you know, but the more stronger thing is that the people on the other side want to hire them and not want to hire them.
Nalini Ambari's videotape, Sound Down, say that 2 seconds are critical. How many seconds after the hand touches the knob have you made up your mind?
Well, she's absolutely right, because we do look for some eye contact, and we look, you know, if people are shaking hands, we look for a firm handshake. And, you know, I think that those 2 seconds are totally critical to get people's attention. And then for us, though, we do have to go the next step, and we do have to see what their experience as an actor will tell us about
them. And then the next step, how often does the next step sort of contradict what the first impression that you make, or do you revise your impressions constantly?
Oftentimes, often revise our first impression. If somebody can bring an interesting aspect to a part that we never thought of, you know, then they get the job because they prove that, in fact, they thought about this and they're the only ones for the part, you know, and all of those other 80 or 90 people that we've seen are not going to be as fresh as they are, you know.
What if somebody is supposed to be playing a depressed person?
I know, right? Exactly. I was thinking about that when you were talking about that, because a lot of people feel like in a job interview, they're always looking for good characteristics. And on the contrary, sometimes we're not looking for good characteristics. We're looking for the thief or the liar the downtrodden or something like that. So they've got to be able to fake it well, and fake it well is to be able to act it well, I think.
Interesting. Carolyn Pickman, how many times out of 10 do people override the first impression?
Right.
I would say often, but maybe about 4 or 5 times.
Almost half the time.
Yeah, almost half the time. Yeah.
And that goes to the point that, you know, first impressions aren't 100%.
In this industry, no, because we need to go the next step, and we sort of need to test people a little bit on their ability and their skill as an actor and what they know as far as a craft goes. So,
Carolyn Pickman, we're going to keep looking, keep trying to get to know people. 1-800-423-8255. Graham is on the line.
Hi.
Hello, Graham.
Yes, my question is principally addressed to Dr. Ambari, but actually your other guest just made a remark that first impressions aren't 100%. That sounds like a massive understatement to me. Dr. Ambari made what sounded to me like a very good case that first impressions are lasting and decisive in forming a view of other people. But I'm wondering how you would assess the accuracy of those impressions. I'm personally very skeptical of first impressions. It seems to me they have at least as much, probably more, to do with the perceptions, the mental apparatus and personality of the perceiver. Mm-hmm. And they really are an abstraction.
Right.
And also, it seems to me that what knowledge I have of human psychology is that there's almost always more to people than meets the eye.
Right. I think you're right. I mean, it depends on what you're looking for. That's, you know, one of the things that you pointed out is it depends on the perceiver, and you're exactly right. That's why we're more accurate when we get a bunch of perceivers and we aggregate their responses. The second point that you raise is that, you know, that there's more to people than meets the eye, and that's true. But if you're trying to judge something that can be judged pretty fast and rapidly based on a first impression, then people are accurate. Let me give an example. If you think of you know, personality as sort of the layers of an onion, and that there are the deeper layers, and, you know, for example, things like perseverance or maybe intelligence can't be judged, I don't think, from first impressions, but you can judge extroversion, and there's tons of data out there showing that no matter how you define extroversion, if you define it in terms of performance or in terms of self ratings or other people's ratings, or or friends' ratings or family's ratings, first impressions sort of get at that. They get at extroversion, they get at dominance. So there's certain aspects of behavior that they get at, but they by no means get at everything.
And that
would be a gross exaggeration.
Another important point is that those things correlate with real-world results. They correlate with good job performance.
Right.
We're talking a lot about jobs. I wish you'd talk about the science of love at first sight. I mean, the simplest version of evolutionary psychology and this sort of thing is that that males are looking for females who will sit on the eggs, and females are looking for males who will protect the nest. And our own experience of this is that these judgments come incredibly fast. You know out of nowhere. Love walked in and all that kind of stuff, as the songwriters say. What's the science of that, Nalini?
I don't know if there is much science of that yet.
There's got to be.
But people tend to, and I think that's really driven by individual preferences. So love me, walk in for you.
But oftentimes preferences that we don't know about.
Right. And I think that's sort of overdetermined by a number of different factors, and so it's hard to isolate in this fashion. I think there is consensus.
One of those little computers in the brain that Steve Pinker writes about that is a highly refined scanner, as we say, for not just all that heart throbbing, but the judgments of a good mate, a good parent.
Right.
And Chris, I actually don't know the research, but I know I've seen mention of it. Research that looks at sense of smell and how people react to that, and that's actually very important and part of what makes that first judgment when it comes to finding out whether you're in love with somebody or not. Unfortunately, I don't know much about the research.
Well, I think you gotta get busy on it. 1-800-423-8255. Jerry is calling from Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, Jerry.
I have a couple of points. One is that I'm a little bit dubious about this. I'm an employer. I have a small restaurant, and we hire people at different ages. And the younger people, I remember from my own childhood when I was young and looking for a job, I was shy, when I was, which came out as hostility, I think, And I remember a job I got where I felt that of me, afterwards I thought about it. And they loved me. They thought it was great, I was willing and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you get people who are intelligent who may be hustlers, They can give you all the impression you want. You think they're great. I can't correlate anything. I'm not saying I'm smart or anything like that, or I'm right, but a lot of times I can't correlate a person's reactions because they're so enthusiastic you're going to come in. One thing I've learned is that if someone says, I'll give you 110% effort, don't hire them.
What does that tell you?
It doesn't tell me anything. It's just observation that they're full of crap.
That gets at the use of words, and that somebody saying that they're going to give 100%, 110%, isn't what we need to be looking at. We need to be looking at some of the nonverbals.
I want to say something else that I think is very important. It's an experience I had when I was young looking for work. I was in my 20s. And a friend of mine and I went looking for a job, and he had experience in it. We went to a steel factory in New Jersey. He had experience. We went there. I was hired. He wasn't. And I remember telling someone about this later, a woman at a party, and she said, well, they probably saw something in you that they didn't see in him. And I said, yeah, he was black and I was white. So that hasn't come into the discussion now, but just the experience people have when they see a black person, the fear, the doubt, the hostility, it's there.
Yeah.
It's a dominant part of our society.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
2 seconds, the 2-second video test reveals race and reveals a person's reaction.
Right.
How strong is it?
Yeah, well, we found that race, surprisingly doesn't correlate that much. You would think it would, but I think because you're looking at the behavior in the context of the situation that it's important for. So, for example, if you're looking at managers when they're managing, or if you're looking at salespeople when they're selling, you're looking at teachers when they're teaching, then I think people don't take race into account that much. They look at the actual behaviors, and they're sort of able to not focus on race, although, of course,
How about the corporate job marketplace, yeah. Daniel Hogan?
Again, we don't have, I don't know the research on the impact of race in this particular situation. that one of the ways of dealing with that, of course, is to use the audio channel. And if you content filter the audio channel, then you don't have that problem. But that doesn't occur a lot. There is also, interestingly, we haven't talked much about this, research on of movement and gesture and what you pick up from the non-face, where you wouldn't have, where you can get around the race issue.
Right.
Do you want to elaborate a little bit of that?
Nalini, can you talk about that?
Right. For example, you can have people just shown from the neck down, and you're just looking at their body movements and their gestures. And those have been prone to predict certain important types of variables, and they correlate. And so, for example, if you put people in a dark room and you just put lights at their joints and you have them to walk, ask them to walk and run, people can identify sex and age pretty well. They can't identify race.
Can they identify warmth? Energy.
They can identify energy, right, and warmth, but they can't identify race because they're looking at the gestures and the movements.
Of course, they can't identify race, but can they come to a judgment about whether I want to be in that person's course or have that person?
I don't know. I don't know to the extent that you're judging. You're judging teachers, but you can make certain. They might be able to identify whether this person is physically attractive or not. For example, just based on the movements, if you're thinking of the romantic type of relationships. But I'm not sure that this would predict anything to do with actual performance on a job.
Meet them in the dark.
Unless looking at acting.
1-800-423-8255. Kathy is in Pocatello, Idaho.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
Oh, this is a great show.
Thank you.
I just kind of wanted to go back to something that was mentioned earlier. A woman had called in and said it was love at first sight. And in my experience, it's always been sniff at first, or love at first sniff, you should say. And, I mean, when I think of, smells from your past, how it will instantly put, I think smell is really powerful. Mm-hmm. And the three great loves in my life have all been very distinctive smells, and I fell in love with them for the way they smelled.
Are we talking about sort of Chanel No. 5 or industrial leftovers or what?
No, one smelled like freshly baked bread. Hmm. One smelled like cilantro, which I love.
Hmm.
And the other one had his very own blend of hand-rolled cigarettes.
Wow,
and
that's a clue. What about garlic?
No garlic. Though I do like garlic. But I was just wondering how powerful... I mean, it's got to be a powerful element in in first impressions.
A man where you notice the cilantro sort of aroma around him has got to be somebody special.
Yeah, oh, he's wonderful.
Well, this all sounds quite delicious, but I think, and I think you're right. Maybe in terms of, romantic relationships, which Chris has been trying to get us to talk about, this probably does have a huge impact, the smells. And
which
perhaps
is something
in a job
I felt as soon as you walked into the room, Nathaniel.
The two-second smell.
Kathy, thank you. We'll remember that. Cilantro is good. 1-800-423-8255. Paula is on the line.
Yes, hi. This is a great show. Thanks.
We'll agree on that. And we just met. Okay.
See? My question was that when you're in a job interview, I hate to bring it back to jobs, but if you're in a job interview and you're interviewing with somebody who may be threatened by... some of these signals because they themselves aren't like that, would that be...
What do you mean?
Well, if you're in a job interview or you're talking to someone and you have the warmth and you have that openness or whatever it is that engages people, have you found that the perception of the person doing the maybe judging might be... threatened if they themselves aren't like that?
I think that's for you, Dan Hogan.
Yeah, I think that very definitely can be the case, and that's one of the reasons you want to have more than one person doing this so that you can balance that out. But it absolutely can be the case that can happen, and that's a difficult situation if it does.
Hmm.
But that's why there's strength in numbers there, and one of the things you want to be doing is getting, somewhere around five people seeing a person, and that's going to give you some confidence that your overall ratings are going to be okay.
Paula, thank you. 1-800-423-8255. The first impression connection. Joe is on the line.
Hello.
Hello, Joe. Welcome.
Hi. I work for a large pharmaceutical company, and we're in the process of hiring a lot of people at the same time. And I just wanted to make a comment about the way our corporation is almost trying to systemize the interview process. And I was listening to how people audition for shows. They're almost trying to remove the individual perception of people and really put in a systematic way of reviewing their competencies to almost put away individual perceptions. I don't think they're being very successful in doing it, but we're trying to hire literally about 700 people in one fell swoop, and this is the third time we've done it this year, and it's becoming quite difficult. Do you think that's possible to do, to eliminate perception in a systematic review?
Right. I mean, if the competencies are what's really important, then I think that's fine. Dan, why don't you go ahead, sir?
I think if you look actually at, I have right in front of me actually a review of the different kinds of ways of hiring people and their validity. And perhaps the best, the highest right now is work sample tests. And I think that's the woman from CP Castings was talking about. You know, looking at the work that they've done is the best way. And then one of the other best things is looking at a person's intelligence. That's if you have only one predictor to use, that's one of the best. And it sounds like the pharmaceutical company is trying to do something like that. But you're better off if you can apply more. You'll get higher validity if you can look at something like conscientiousness or other personality factors that are important. But then it gets into, like, if you're trying to hire 700 people and you have very little time, you got to do it very quickly. One of the things this is saying is that you can make some of these judgments pretty quickly. I think people get overwhelmed by the amount, you know, do you have to give personality tests? Do you have to give long, drawn-out interviews? And this is saying that you can do this in a pretty reliable and valid way without an awful lot of work. And if you can't afford to interview the person, you may be able to do it over the phone. That's another possibility, is that you do get something for the audio channel, Chris. And using a phone interview is, Chris, you could, screen your callers by doing some rating.
It's a very interesting, that's a huge subject. We won't get to it this hour, but I always feel that people express a great deal more of their whole self and communicate more emotion of all stripes on the radio than they do, say, on television, where you can't see them. But that's another bag. 1-800-423-8255 makes the first impression connection. Jerry is on the line.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Thank you. I have a quick question about sociopaths. How do you recognize an effective sociopath in 10 seconds?
And should you fall in love with him?
Yes.
This is an interesting question.
Or
It reminds me of that early screening of, bomb, plane hijackers, which people originally tried to do on a first impression at the airline gate. Is it possible?
I don't think so. I think it's really impossible. If they're an effective sociopath, which you said they were, I think that would be really hard to do. I think you need to give them other sorts of tests. And one of the things that we're not very good at judging from first impressions is honesty, actually. People are pretty bad at judging deception from first impressions. So.
Doesn't the record of screening terrorists at the airlines, before all the electronic searching of everything, doesn't that rather embarrass the theory that you can tell stuff at first impressions? In other words, the record of that going back to the late 60s, early 70s, was that people screening for bad folk actually leaned on all sorts of cliches, including color of skin.
All sorts of stereotypes and socioeconomic cues. That would definitely be a case where you don't want to rely on them. Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you want to sum up Nalini Ambari as to maybe going back to Oscar Wilde, that only shallow people don't judge by appearances, and that there's something very, very important communicated in those first seconds?
It depends on what you're judging. If you're judging something that is valid and that that first impressions can pick up, then you might be accurate. But it's very important to look at the context in which the behavior is occurring.
And that's mainly the interpersonal side of the equation.
So take a good 2-second look and keep looking. Thank you, Nalini Ambari. Thank you, Dan Hogan. Thanks also to Carolyn Pickman, the casting director who joined us earlier. Listeners, you can continue to make first impressions on our website at theconnection, oneword.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston. Funding for The Connection comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and from the Allaire Corporation.
PRI, Public Radio International.
From Boston University, this is WBUR. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Mass General West, the services of Massachusetts General Hospital available off Route 128. Primary care and specialty services for children and adults. 781-522-9000. By E-Prize Corporation, named one of